Heather Morgan is an artist, and the medium she's chosen is the inbox. Getting responses to cold emails can be tough, and Heather has made a career of helping sales teams garner the attention of their leads. Heather is founder and CEO of SalesFolk, and her company regularly helps clients triple response rates and excite customers through the medium of email. She warms up the chill, she starts cold conversations, and essentially, they are with prospects with whom you have targeted as being ideal customers and ideal prospects with whom to start a conversation. Heather also has a mastery course on email, which she openly provides all of her secrets. In fact, I'm a student in her class. That's how good I think her teachings are. So you can check it out on her website, and I'll put the information in the show notes for you. In this podcast, Heather reveals the research and data needed before you send out your first cold email, reading the mind of your prospects to find your ideal buyers, and tips for creating focused emails for each and every customer account that you have. Hey, everybody. It's Mary Lou Tyler, and you guys are going to love this session. On the session with me today is Heather R. Morgan. She is a former economist and the CEO and founder of a company in the Bay Area called SalesFolk, SalesFolk. And the reason why you are going to love this conversation is because Heather has really spent a lot of time in figuring out the formula, the code, whatever you want to call it, in starting conversations with people we don't know and doing it in a way that gets people to act quickly, predictably, and consistently. So she has a background that is going to be very helpful for you as you start crafting your emails, as you start thinking about the types of scripts and voicemails that you want to leave. Her methodology, her framework, her systems are a must study in order to be able to generate sales qualified leads and even take it further into the pipeline if you're an account executive who actually closes business. But her particular methodology is something that you're going to want to study and really master. So without further ado, Heather, welcome.
Hi, Mary Lou. Thank you for that sparkling intro there. I'm very happy to be on the podcast today and share a little bit about cold email best practices and what you can do to improve your emails.
Perfect. So tell us, the first thing that I want to know is what got you interested in this very difficult, it's a very difficult mastery, really. It comes down to starting conversations with people we don't know is a very difficult part of the pipeline. So what got you interested in this and where have you taken it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my story is a little bit unusual. It's not the story that, I got into sales or tech or anything like that. I've liked writing for a very long time and reading. And I sent my first cold email, which was really a letter, when I was about 4 years old to my favorite author, Robert Quackenbush, in New York. And he responded with a few autographed books and a letter back a few months later. And so since then, I had this idea that you should just reach out and start conversations with people. And in the beginning, a lot of them were people like my favorite authors. And then obviously men of children's books. And that sort of carried on. And then it started to be famous CEOs and different people that I was interested in meeting and just having a conversation with. And so for me, it was really something that came from a love of writing. And it was just something that I just did. I would do it also when I would move to a new country because I lived in 7 different countries. Mm. And so like when I moved to Hong Kong and I didn't really know many people, I would make a list of different interesting people to meet off of LinkedIn or different groups and just start cold emailing them or different interesting companies. And so I think it really did originally come from, and it still does, come from a genuine place of just starting, wanting to start a conversation with someone. And so I think that's what makes my approach different than a lot of other salespeople. Mm-hmm. Because although, you know, we work with sales companies or companies, sales organizations now, it didn't start as a sales thing. It started as, I want to start conversations and have intelligent conversations that add value and build rapport. And so that's where it started. But it wasn't until I worked basically doing business development with a Silicon Valley company, a little over 3 years ago, maybe four, now that I really started to do cold outreach for my company. And I actually didn't know that that was a thing. to give some background, I guess I didn't really know what I was doing with that job, to be honest. It was in the games industry, mobile games. And I don't know if you play games. I don't. No. and so here I am, just moved back from Cairo. I was an economist, so no background in tech, no background in sales, biz dev, anything. And I'm supposed to start conversations with, like, the C-suite of gaming companies. And I don't play games or know anything about it. And so I'm just thinking, okay, what do you do? And, I mean, I did the only thing I could think to do, which was just, you know, build a couple CSVs of 100 or so contacts each and start reaching out to people. And within 2 or 3 weeks, I had like a 68% response rate from people like the founder of Guitar Hero. And I didn't even know that was a good response rate. I thought it was okay. But to be honest, I was just like, okay, well, cool. People are responding. And then it wasn't until my boss, because he started getting all these meetings with, like, you know, these crazy cool people. He started asking me, okay, what are you doing? Are you getting intros? Like, how are you talking to these people? How are we meeting them? And he said, I don't know. I'm just emailing them. I don't have any connections. I'm just reaching out. And he was blown away. So he started to brag about it. And then next thing I know, I have like half a dozen other companies at 500 startups, which we were at the time, trying to poach me. And that's sort of when I started doing some freelance work for them and how SalesFolk ended up being born.
Wow, that's a great story. What I liked was the fact that you had, and this is for people who are listening, who think they need to have a Rolodex, what we call a Rolodex of names or relationships already pre-built in order to start conversations. You came into a field where you really had no background, you had no connections, but through your words and through the way you wrote your emails, you were able to get people excited and get people to actually lean into their computer thinking, wow, how does she do that? Or what? I would really like to know more. And so that is a formula that everybody on this phone call wants to know more about, how you went about that. And can you put that into a framework? Is there a system for that?
I think there definitely is, because, I mean, we're at a point now where I really don't write many of our customers cold emails. I'll write a few of them just to stay sharp each month, but we have way too much demand at this point for me to still be writing our cold emails, because that doesn't scale. Mm-hmm. And so what I had to do about 6 months into starting my own company, we reached a point where I realized to scale, I had to reverse engineer my processes. Mm-hmm. And so what I did was basically look what I was doing and what was and wasn't working, and mapped everything out into operations documents to train people. And then I iterated on that a lot. But what I think it really comes down to at the core is thinking about your audience first. And I know a lot of people say this, but I don't think enough salespeople think carefully enough about their audience. And so you really need to spend time before you write a single email thinking about your audience and doing research. That doesn't mean, you know, like the Bosch show or whatever method, researching every single person. what we're looking at today with sales, as I'm sure you know, you need velocity. Mm-hmm. And so rather than researching everyone, you define your audience or your buyer persona, and you say, okay, we're looking at VP sales at software companies of a certain size, maybe even a certain location. And then you would take like a sample of 10 or so contacts and research them, looking at their LinkedIn profiles, Twitter, anything else you can find to think of keywords, KPIs they care about, pain points, all those things. And so once you have in your head, and hopefully some notes on paper, an idea of who your audience is, then you can start writing. But if you don't do that, you won't be able to add value. And I think it's really all about adding value to your customer and being relevant to them.
Okay. And, mm-hmm. So let me stop you there, because a lot of now, what size of companies do you currently hang your hat in? Is it startup? Is it mid upmarket? You know.
Yeah. So we're definitely moving more upmarket. In the early days, we work with all kinds of companies. Mm-hmm. We have a course for startups that are a little more early stage to sort of self-serve themselves and educate themselves. Mm-hmm. But I'd say we're probably working with like at least Series B startups all the way to like enterprise companies now.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So the reason why I stopped you is because you mentioned mm-hmm. the term buyer persona.
Yeah.
Now, in the larger companies, typically those personas mm-hmm. are crafted by the marketing team.
Yeah.
Are you saying that you recommend a salesperson doing his or her own, or are they taking marketing and building on them, or is what marketing does good enough?
I definitely don't think generally what marketing does is good enough in most organizations based on what we see from our clients. Mm-hmm. But, you know, whether you're making an official document or just spending 10 minutes to get your head in the game, mm-hmm. I think every salesperson should be doing it, because the trick to writing really good cold emails, whether you're writing them to one person or 1,000, is having them sound personal and relevant. And I like to actually try to write for one person in my head. And so even if I'm not going to just write that email for one person, even if it's just going to be a template that goes to a large number of people, mm-hmm. I need to have someone in my head to do that. And so I guess if you already know all the people in the industry and you can just imagine it and you know everything, maybe you don't need to do that. But almost every time I look at a LinkedIn profile, I can think of a new keyword or something to include. And so it doesn't take much time, but to just browse LinkedIn and even like their Twitter and see what things they're talking about, what kind of content are they sharing right now? Not that you're necessarily going to bring that up, but to just sort of know what's on their mind helps you think of better ideas for emails. Even if you're not going to include them exactly, just sort of gets you focused on writing better.
Okay. So this sounds like it's a somewhat manual process. It's doing research. Are there tools that we think could help people?
Honestly, I don't think it's a tool thing. I think, you know, I mean, there's a ton of tools out there, mm-hmm. but simply just doing a quick LinkedIn search can really help. And you can take people that are already on your list. Say you're a salesperson and you are given a list to prospect from. You could definitely take just a dozen random names from that list and look at some of them. Mm-hmm. But it really doesn't take you more than 10 to 20 minutes to, like, you know, look for 30 seconds or a minute at a LinkedIn profile. And like I said, you're not doing this for everyone. Like, enriching data for personalization is a totally different thing. And there are tools to do that, or you could scrape, or you could have Odesk workers, which is now Upwork, doing that for you for $3 an hour in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. But this isn't really so much for, like, individual emails. I mean, it could be, obviously, if you're just have like 20 targeted accounts that you're assigned to. Maybe if your market is very small, you want to spend more time researching. It's really more about simply having your head in the game focused on your audience. And technology can't really do that for you. Like, you can't, your mind has to be really thinking about who are these people. Even looking at like job descriptions can be really good. Mm-hmm. I'll often look at, when we're doing a persona I don't know as well, a few job descriptions to see the KPIs. And so if I'm trying to, maybe write a campaign for a CISO and I don't know a lot about them, I might look at a few job descriptions on Glassdoor or LinkedIn to see what their responsibilities are. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you know, marketing might have that, and like looking at that document might be good. But I think a lot of times you just have to get that inside your head for writing those emails.
Yeah. So for you sales managers listening who have said over and over again, marketing generates buyer personas, this, you're hearing from Heather directly that you still need to take maybe that as a baseline, but you need to supplement that with your own personalized research. And if you're working with larger companies that are publicly held, even going to their, 10K and all those forms that are published on Edgar that give their annual reports where they're talking about what things they're trying, what initiatives they're trying to solve, what challenges they have to overcome, you're reading the language directly from the people within the firm, mm-hmm. who you're trying to target. So it really does fall into sales as one of the things you guys have to do to prepare for writing and crafting good emails. Would you say so, Heather?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you brought up some great points that made me think a little bit. I've never done acting, but I know that actors, they try to get into the minds of the people they're supposed to portray. And with sales, I think it's similar. You have to try to get in the minds of your customers. And so, it's great to interview the people that you're talking to or know those people, and that helps you have a stronger grasp. But I think it's actually huge to be able to read their writing, because at least for me, and I think for everyone on a subconscious level, that starts to allow you to emulate the tone, mm-hmm. That you need to write in. And so, like, as you read a LinkedIn profile, it's not just keywords. You're getting a sense of the tone. How do these people write? How do they describe themselves? And one of the richest places to look is on their recommendations they've given and received, because that's somewhere where they're really going to show what kind of person they are in terms of how they describe others and what they value, as well as, what others value in them.
Okay. So, Heather, do you recommend certain, I don't want to pigeonhole you into like a process step, but you mentioned the keywords, you mentioned what I call sentiment, which is getting a kind of feel for the,
definitely.
Are there other sort of levers that you look for and pull and write down on your piece of paper besides those two?
Yeah, I think those are all good. I'm also especially looking for benefits and pain points, because those sort of become the basis of your emails.
Okay.
So to sort of go another step further, once you have this information, you need to write emails. But if you're writing 8 emails, which we found statistically speaking is probably the optimal number of emails for you to send in order to get your maximum possible response rate, since about 1/3 of responses will usually come from emails 5 through 8, based on what we've seen. Mm-hmm. Those emails need to be tightly focused and not redundant. And so when we do a campaign for our clients, we're not only doing 8 emails, we're usually doing multiple variants and multiple personas. And so next thing you know, you have 16, 32, 64 emails you're writing. And so how do you keep that organized? It's overwhelming. And how do you get enough ideas and not be redundant? I think it's important to sort of brainstorm and write your ideas down before you write an email. And so if you're doing your research and you're taking notes in a document, it's really easy to look back at it and say, okay, well, what are my benefits and pain points from my research? What will my emails become? Mm-hmm. And so for every benefit of your product, there is a corresponding pain point. And so as we're thinking about how to write our emails, we can think of it 2 different ways. We can think of it as sort of a spectrum between positive and value add and negative fear-driven pain, Or we can also think of it as very high level, all the way down to very specific use cases of how they can solve a pain point or a different use case for the product. And so I think about it in that way, and then that's how I plan all my emails. And it's very important that your emails themselves are very focused, because I think that one of the problems I see a lot, actually, I see two problems. The first being people try to shove too much into one email. So I was on a 2-hour consultation call today where probably the first 20 or 30 minutes of it, I had to explain to the client why they can't just try to shove like 5 benefits into an email. Mm-hmm. And so they said, but you know, that's one benefit. And I said, okay, yeah, but what one are we focusing on? And the reason for that is, basically, if we try to do too many things, nothing works very well. Mm-hmm. And so with that in mind, we dilute our message. And if it's too long, people just don't read it because it's rambling. So unless the benefits are like peanut butter and jelly, people should just focus on one thing per email. But they have 8 emails to overall share their messages, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. The other thing I wanted to ask you is, I'm a firm believer in, because this is, we're talking about the cold cue, mm-hmm. you know, the where we're reaching out to people, we are targeting them. And I subscribe to the, I think it was written in 1960, but Eugene Schwartz's 5 levels of awareness. So can you touch on a little bit, not only the benefits, but how you write emails based on whether the person is completely unaware of what you have to do, you know, have to offer.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, as I explained to my clients, you look in the fridge at night, you're hungry, but you don't know what you want. So you're aware of a problem, but you don't know a good solution.
So, and I haven't read that book, but I'm definitely interested to check it out. But is this sort of like crossing the chasm and how aware customers are of their pain points? Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, it's definitely okay. Was written for, think of the 1960s advertising when they're introducing all these new products where people are like, why do I need a small car?
Yeah, you
know, kind of thing. So like that. And there's 5 levels. I'll briefly explain them. It's the unaware level. There's awareness of the problem. There's awareness of the problem and potential solutions. Mm-hmm. There's awareness of the solution and also the vendors. And then there's complete awareness. They know the vendors. They know they want a short list. They're very interested and they have a sense of urgency. So, you know, usually inbound people filling out a form, doing a search, those are interested people. But there are 3 levels before that that we in our world, starting conversation mm-hmm. with people we don't know, have to worry about.
Definitely. Yeah, no, that's a great point. So before I would even think of that, which is a great question, we actually had a conversation very similar to this with one of our writers the other day. And I think it shows that people are being very thoughtful, and that's a good thing. And so I think there's a couple things going on. So in the context of cold email, I like to try and imagine all the situations that a customer might be in and basically the range of situations and what would be the most ideal customer for me. Okay. And so, for example, if I am in recruiting and I'm trying to get customers, I don't know if say I'm just have a list of customers and I don't know anything about like their job postings or anything like that. I don't know if I'm blind to this, which companies I'm reaching out to are going to be needing recruiters for hiring or not. Mm-hmm. Some of them might already have recruiters. Some of them, you know, might not. Some of them might not even be hiring. But until I have signals like, well, they just raised another round of funding, or I see they already have a bunch of job postings or whatever, I don't know unless I have those indicators. And so the more you can have those indicators, the more I think you can pinpoint the states of awareness mm-hmm. and sort of target your emails to that. But I think it's not always possible because you don't know who in your audience. It might very well, and it usually is a range of, you know, they're mildly aware to, you know, quite aware or vice versa, or just, you know, no one even knows what this is. This is a new category. Mm-hmm. And even not even aware of the product, but pains. How aware are they of them? And so oftentimes it is a range. And I, when it is, will think about who is my ideal customer? Who's my dream customer? Mm-hmm. Not dream as in like, what's the dream logo, but like who would need me the most or my service or my product?
Right.
And those are what I call the low-hanging fruit. And so the low-hanging fruit are the emails, probably the first 1, 2, maybe 3 emails you write should be targeting.
Okay.
After that, the low-hanging fruit are probably out of your campaign. So if you're thinking logically, by about email 3, the people who are either very interested in your emails or totally not interested, never want you to talk to them again, have probably responded. And then after that, you have people who are either, you know, maybe just not that responsive or might be on the fence or maybe they're busy. And you don't know if by email 4, any of those people have read your emails at all yet or if they've been reading every single one.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you do with analytics, but when you start your campaign, when you actually write those emails, you don't know. There could be people who email 6 is the first email they read. And so as you're writing them, you need to also have every email standalone, but you need to have your sequence become increasingly direct and have more things to deal with skeptics or less aware people. So to sort of get back to your question, I know I was meandering off a little bit. Your first few emails should be for the people who are most likely to be more aware. I'm not sure if the awareness is an awareness of the pain point or an awareness of your product, mm-hmm. but people who are in need, severe need, and have a lot of interest. And then after that, you need to sort of take the challenger sale approach even more and have more and more evidence. Not to say that those other emails don't have some elements of the challenger sale, but they're going to have more and more directness, more and more explanations, more and more reasons that would help overcome doubt, and also different, maybe different use cases of the product for people that are less likely to be aware of the pain point.
Okay.
So it's kind of an interesting question you asked. I guess I've not really thought about it that way. Like I've thought of those things, but they're not necessarily the underlying things I think about. I think usually more about like, who's the best customer and who could be in my audience and how do I find a way to get those people really quickly and then vary my email campaign so that I can try and test as many things as possible and attract a range of people as much as I can.
Yeah, I think you've answered it. Because, you know, of course, I'm coming from a process background. So yeah. Everything of mine is formulaic. And, and you know, I consider you more of the creative with ROI in mind, but I'm definitely processed. So I'm looking at the raw data to tell me behaviorally what people are doing and when they act. So Eugene Schwartz's level of awareness document, which was written a very long time ago, maps perfectly for cold cue, you know, for the cold sequence, in that he's saying that of every 100 people, your first through third email is probably reaching 3 to 10, somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. And it may even, the second and third may get up to 30 more of people saying, I know I don't want this, you know, like mm-hmm. you said before. But then you've got, you know, 60-ish, 67-ish, depending on that 7, of people who still need to be sold, you know, that this is something that's of value. This is something they should be putting on their urgency list or bumping up and bubbling up to the top. So I like, you answered my question in that, what you're saying is low-hanging fruit first, you know, get the people who are recognizing there's a problem, recognizing there's solutions out there, didn't realize the sense of urgency, but you have now shared that with them so that they're like, holy crap, I really need to do something about this, and I really need to respond to this email. Get those guys first, and then the rest you're going to nurture along with specificity around endorsements and testimonials and specifics about the results that you get so that people start thinking, wow, you know, I never really thought of it that way.
Yeah, and I think probably almost every email we write has some element of social proof. Mm-hmm. But I think of it, I actually think of it very quantitatively, almost like a score in terms of how strong or weak or positive or negative something is.
Yep.
So, you know, you could have something that's like a score of 5, which might be like the extreme value add, or you could have a score of like -5, which be like the extreme fear of loss, or something more neutral, like a 0. Mm-hmm. And so usually you don't want to start your campaign with something really negative. It depends. There are some situations you more so actually want to go with something that's positive, but a little more neutral and intriguing, that has an element of mystery. Mm-hmm. To try and just get the people who would have that relevant problem to be interested, but interested in a way that they're also just intrigued to respond to you.
Right.
But those people are done by like email 2 or 3. And so you just have to become much more direct with mm-hmm. your approach.
Okay.
And so I think it's even the directness is part of what changes as you go through that campaign. And then I like to often alternate between like if something is a strong fear of loss email, then you have something more value add next, because you don't want it to be too negative.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Well, I've kept you longer than I think.
<Your problem. laughs>
But it's yeah. I want you to share with the audience, you know, how this is this topic can go on forever, because this to me this is the missing link. This is what, you know, the book Predictable Revenue really never talked about, but it's very important. And you've taken it to a level that I think, you know, your response rates probably blow away anything that most people are experiencing. So I'm sure people in the audience are wanting to know, how the heck do they get a hold of you, Heather?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a few ways. One, you can always tweet at me at Heather Rehan, R-E-Y-H-A-N. Also, you can visit the Sales Folk website, salesfolk.com, and fill out a consultation request form, or shoot me an email at heather@salesfolk.com.
Okay. And you mentioned that you do have, and I am actually a student of, your course. So can you elaborate a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the course is somewhat new, something I wanted to do for a long time. Made it a few months ago, coded it myself. Basically, I tried to distill a lot of the information that we give our clients, and that the questions I hear people asking over and over and over, like, how do you write good subject lines that get opened? How do you build social proof? How do you structure a touch campaign and so forth? All these things.
Mm-hmm.
I try to just basically create content to share others, because I only have 24 hours in a day. And so that's what it is. So far, we have 14 lessons, mm-hmm. and we're adding a new one until further notice every other week. And it really already covers a lot of the main topics that people already ask.
Yeah. So if you're a do-it-yourselfer and want to get started, a lot of my clients are like that. They want to dig in first and then, mm-hmm. you know, realize very quickly that it can be a little bit overwhelming and daunting. But now they have your contact information, so they can
definitely
get a hold of you. And I really recommend, if you're serious about generating predictable amount of sales qualified leads, that you have a consult with Heather, because she will set you on the right direction for sure and jumpstart you from where you are now. And for many of the people listening who don't think lead gen works in cold situations, it doesn't work because you haven't done this homework of figuring out who the ideal targets are, how you have those conversations, and in what order. And like we were talking about, how many of those emails should be done per persona. All of this is covered in Heather's courses. And then, of course, for those of you who want to jumpstart, give her a call directly. Heather, thank you so much for your time. I very much appreciate it. And I could talk to you forever.
I know. It's so great to catch up with you. Thanks for having me, Mary Lou.
Okay, we'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye.